Hello, and thank you for standing by. I'd like to remind all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Alan, I'll do a quick roll call.
Yes, please.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's PEDNR call on Tuesday the 15th of December with Alan Greenberg, Tatiana Kramtsova, Siva Mutuzami, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Michaeli Nalon, Barry Cobb, Mike O'Connor, Jeffrey Eckhaus, Elaine Doolan, Michael Pelage, Ron Rickersham, Suzuki, Tim Ruiz, Michael Young, Dave Kisundoyo, Phil Corwin. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies, Paul Diaz, Matt Serlin, James Bladell. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names this evening, we do have a large audience. Thank you. Back to you, Alan.
Thank you, Gisela. All right. As we were discussing before the recording started, unfortunately, the two agenda items that we had for today are both not going to be presented due to Michael Young is not quite ready to do the presentation he was going to do. And Marika tells me that there's really not sufficient new in the registrar survey to spend any significant amount of time on that. Given that, I do have some thoughts on what we should do, but first I'd like to talk a little bit about next meetings and decide which meetings over the holidays are we going to try to hold and which ones are we simply feel there isn't going to be enough people around. We're talking about meetings potentially on the 22nd and 29th, and then I'm assuming they would resume, regardless of what we do over the holidays, on January 5th. Any thoughts on who's going to be around, who isn't going to be around? Should we try to hold one next week or not?
And Michaeli?
Yes.
No and no.
Okay. That is, you're not going to be around and we shouldn't hold a meeting. Did I get the questions right?
In that case, it's no, no, no. In other words,
okay.
No 22nd, no 29th, and no, you shouldn't hold meetings.
All right. ever again, perhaps.
Don't be tempting me. God, don't be tempting me.
Is that a general consensus? It certainly goes along with my feeling that 2 days before Christmas and 2 days before New Year's, to the extent that people are working, they're going to be busy trying to make up for the time that we'll be off.
Hey, Alan, it's Jeff. I guess I'm in agreement with that as well.
Okay. All right. And I'm assuming the majority of us are not taking extended New Year's vacations somewhere warm or somewhere cold for those who are in warm places. And we will resume on the 5th. All right. Given that we don't have the major agenda items, what I would like to do is try to review where we are on this overall process. As many of you have noted, we've gone around in circles a little bit, and I think we've come to some consensus, if not unanimity, on a number of issues. And to try to map out a way that we're going to go forward over the next number of months, I think it's important for us to understand what we have agreed to, where we're going to go from now, going forward. There's a number of issues that we have been talking about or around. One is the clarity of information that is presented to users, to registrants, and what, if anything, should we be doing about it to try to put us in a stronger position. The second is, do we actually need policy change? And the third item, which is very closely related to that in some people's minds, to what extent is there a problem to begin with? And I'd like to try to look at these one by one and decide how we are going to go forward, if not exactly where we're going to go. First issue I think I'd like to talk about is the issue of clarity of information. Do we believe in general that users are presented with sufficient information to make intelligent choices and to set their expectations correctly. We've heard a lot about difficulties in finding things. We've also heard a lot about that we really can't have an expectation of things being a lot better because registrars have to worry about legal issues and cannot make commitments which they're not sure they can completely keep. So we have a spread between what agreements say and in fact what happens. I'd like to hear from people on where do you think we should end up with this and how do we get there? Mikey.
Alan, this is Mikey. I am quite entranced with the idea that we somehow encourage an English language version of the contracts being presented to registrants in addition to the actual contracts. And I actually wasn't kidding, even though my note to the list was pretty lighthearted, when I forwarded that example from another company as a model, because I thought that was quite spot on in terms of the way we could do it. I don't think that anybody disagrees that you have to have a good contract, nor does anybody disagree that ultimately the registrants are bound by that contract. But I think what registrants really need is a good map and an easy way to compare the offerings of different registrars without having to read incredibly complicated contracts just to get the gist of it. And then when you get to the one that you really are thinking about clicking on, then for sure you need the actual contract to go read the clauses that you're interested in. So if we could get the consensus on that idea, I think that would be very helpful.
I'd like to ask you a follow-on question, then we'll go on to Jeff, who has his hand up. The lighthearted example you sent us to had a very short, very lighthearted, I guess is the right way, version of the contract, but then immediately followed it by what was essentially a legal contract.
Right.
And the thing that has been proposed by a number of people is that we actually use plain language, which is, I see the chat going on, is using that expression, instead of the legal contract. And I think those are two very different points. One is an interpretation but not binding, and the other one is an actual rewrite of the contracts. Jeff, you're next.
Yeah, so two things. One is I think that was done by the chat. Part of it is done by the chat, but I hesitate to say that it has to be in English versus the expression I think somebody said in plain English. But either one of those, I'm a little concerned about having to distill, let's say, a legal contract into some other terms and then say, okay, this has to be there, this does not, because I'm still very hesitant. I know just as a registrar we would be on stating – saying, okay, we're going to distill some of this into some other language, and then what if some parts are left off? What, you know, what if the person still doesn't understand what we consider that language? That's the only thing I'm very hesitant about, to say that we need to do that. And to use other examples, like I know that, you know, to say, hey, you know, for other languages, but in other examples, but, you know, this is the – remember that we're with a domain, you're not purchasing a product, you're going into a service agreement, which is a lot different than some of the other agreements we've given the examples to. So if we are going into examples, let's make sure we do apples to apples and we go into service agreements and service contracts versus I want to join, you know, Marriott Miles program. So just make sure, because it's easy to present other contracts and say, hey, this was really easy to read, but remember, it's nowhere near the same level of a service contract, so I just want to keep that in mind there.
Yeah. Based on what a number of people have said either on this call or privately, and I'd like to hear from some of those people. There are a number of models around the world for telephone service contracts, which have made the transition. Tim? I'm sorry, McKaylee next.
Yeah, I think McKaylee was up first.
Yep, sorry.
Let Tim go first.
Okay, well, I was just going to offer my opinion that doing a plain language version of an agreement that isn't necessarily binding but intended as, for clarification, that's one thing, but to try to put a binding agreement completely into plain language, that might be a whole other task. I'm not necessarily saying it couldn't be done, but I think it would be difficult, especially given that we only have, there's only certain parts of the agreements, and then this might be part of what Jeff was getting to, that registrars offer that we could really have, a policy over. So there's still going to be, a number of other aspects of the terms of service that registrars will require that we wouldn't be able to actually require that way. So we'd end up with a mix. But, I certainly think a plain language version that helps to clarify the legal agreement, that's pretty common practice. I that's something that could be explored. And then the other thing is, there's just aspects of agreement sometimes that in certain jurisdictions can't really be worded, they have to be worded a certain way in order for them to be binding, and then that makes it difficult as well to put them in plain language.
McKaylee?
I pretty much echo what Tim was saying. I mean, in principle, the idea of using plain language, the only problem is whether it's legally binding or not. The problem I would see is that while we might make best efforts to put in as simple a language as possible what we're trying to do or not do, or what we promise to do and what we promise not to do, et cetera, et cetera, if we exclude something from the plain language version, either by accident or otherwise, how does that leave us standing? It's a bit. The principle is fine. I'm just not too sure about the implications at a practical level. And as a side note as well, this might be aided a small bit with the infamous registrant's rights and responsibilities document, which is meant to be coming out of another working group.
Ron?
Yes, this is Ron Wickersham. The one thing that's come up in our discussions in NCUC has been over the aspect of should there be an entirely uniform agreement, at least the portions of the registration agreement that concern expiration and recovery of an expired domain name, if those should be absolutely uniform or if there should be some variation. And so some people are advocating, well, the registrar should be free to go beyond a baseline agreement if that agreement is better for the consumer than the base agreement. But I find it's kind of difficult to word something, because thinking of how we would word it, it would be rather difficult to word it so that you could unambiguously state that you could make it more attractive or more beneficial to the end consumer. So I kind of have been arguing on the favor of the same agreement for everyone, just as we have with the dispute resolution process. We don't have separate agreements depending on who you registered the domain name with. That has worked okay, having the same agreement independent of registers. So.
Well, All right. I put myself in the queue because I have a couple of more questions than answers. I understand that the difficulty of putting what are essentially legal terms in simple language. But when I look at some of the contracts, and certainly when look at some of the experience that Marika has found in trying to understand some of the contracts, expressions like the registrar may or may not do something sounds just too far. That's rather plain language. It's not hard to understand, but it doesn't define expectations very well. And I understand language that may be there to cover the exceptional case where something doesn't work or can't be done, but that typically is covered in agreements in a more specific way. And I wonder, to what extent can we legislate that contracts shouldn't have that level of vagueness? The other observation I have is I'm not sure that the registrant rights agreement or the kind of thing that Ron was just saying of a completely uniform agreement is likely to be viable when we're at the same time encouraging diversity and encouraging competition and encouraging different business models and offerings by the registrars. And I'm not sure you can do the same both sides at once. Michele?
Well, the registrant's rights and responsibilities thing is part of the RAA 2009, so it's whether you think it's workable or not is moot because it's already been incorporated in the RAA.
No. That's going to be there, but it only specifies the things that are in fact defined by ICANN ahead of time, not all the variants that registrars, you know, have chosen to build into their various service offerings.
Yes, but the thing is, we're talking about post-expiry domain name recovery, and I mean, one of the salient topics that has come up on multiple occasions on previous calls is in relation to notifications and various other things. And based on the registrar's experiences, a lot of the issues would arise from the fact that the registrants, in many cases, aren't aware that they have to pay for renewals of domain names. So, in some respects, the registrant's rights and responsibilities would cover some of the areas of confusion. And I'm not saying it's going to cover absolutely everything, but I think it would go at least some way towards solving part of the perceived problem.
Okay, thank you. Cheryl?
It's becoming scary how often I start off what I'm going to say by pretty much what Michele just said is covering what I was going to say. We have to watch this, Michele. We're agreeing way, way, way too much. I think we should start an argument somewhere just on principle.
Okay, Cheryl, how about I keep interrupting you? How's that work?
That'll work, because I can talk over just about anybody, including you. But I think that the points which were being made about it being picked up by other work groups is something we need to be very aware of, and I'd be very keen to see between now and our next meeting, perhaps some sort of small matrix or checklist where we believe there are aspects of our role here within post-expiry domain name recovery and what may in fact be being picked up or dealt with or discussed in other work groups, so that we can actually do a cross-check with those work groups and see if indeed our assumptions are correct or whether or not they're making the assumption that we're dealing with it. I don't want something falling through the cracks. However, what Michele said is absolutely accurate, because some of us are on both those work groups in the RAA as well as this one. Coming to a point Alan made, however, where the diversity or competition and choice is in some way limited by uniformity in the contracts. I think if we look to some of the models that are done in allied industries, and might I suggest slightly more complicated things than licensing of domain names, There are ways around that, and perhaps we could also look at how that's addressed and feed that into the other work groups whose job it will probably be to deal with this actual issue. Our recommendations are probably going to be limited by we believe that this and this should be addressed in registrants' rights, plain language contracts, outreach education, etc., etc. We're sort of taking a higher level view of some of these things, at least as far as I can understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Mikey?
Thanks, Alan. This is Mikey. You know, at this point in the working group, it would, at least for me, be really helpful if we could start writing some stuff down and hammering out some language that we can start editing as a group. It seems like we are covering ground that we've covered before. No criticism implied for any of the folks who've talked. It's just that, you know, we need at some point to start recording some of this stuff on paper and then determining language that will work for folks, because what I've heard in these last comments, it seems like if we run back to Tim's, where he's making the distinction between rewriting and to some extent Jeff's comments, rewriting very complicated contracts in plain English versus writing a plain language roadmap to that same contract. It would just be nice to get some of these concepts embedded on a document that we could then tune a little bit.
Jeff.
Yeah, sure. I quick just add on point about, I guess, sort of the next steps in putting this down. I guess, though, I want to be clear on this just so we can say, you know, about what we're focusing on and what this group is here for. So we can't, I don't know, maybe, you know, somebody can help me on this on where we're able to say what we, you know, to our request, but on the, let's say the plain language or however we're determining it. For this group, is that only going to be, I assume that's only going to be in reference to parts of the contract that describe what happens in for the domain, so as it relates to post-expiration domain name recovery, not on the total contract. Is that assumption correct?
Yes, certainly our scope does not exceed past expiration.
But we can clearly
see that specified, and that may or may not be, one may or may not be able to extrapolate that into other parts of the contract. But
right.
The whole
so,
contract is out of our domain.
Right. So what I guess my thought is, with crossing over into other groups is for, say, so us like a registrar to say we wouldn't want this, you know, one PDP to finish and say this one has to be in plain language, and then another one comes out and says it has to be in a different language, and you know, that sort of, you know, that is sort of format. So is there a way to coordinate between the groups? Is that, Alan, as you, I don't want to put more work, but as a chair, is there some way that, you know, that these discussions can somehow, I don't want it to bleed through, but to have these discussions so that we don't have to do 2-3 times the amount of work? Is that possible?
Well, certainly, I've been making notes as we run along, and two items up was we need to ensure that we mesh with the other working groups. That is, there's no gaps and no overlap.
Okay, thanks.
Michele?
Well, just kind of going back a bit on what Mikey was saying. I mean, we've been having these conversations and every Tuesday for quite some time, and while I do enjoy the kind of the banter and everything else, I think we do really need to look at this stage, you know, have a kind of something a bit more tangible rather than just kind of talking and basically coming back to saying the same things. I mean, ultimately, you're not going to change the registrar's opinions on certain things. You're not going to change other stakeholder groups' opinions on other things. And I think we've kind of covered most areas in greater or lesser depth. So, I mean, from my perspective, it would be useful and possibly more fruitful if we were to start looking at it.
Oh, that's interesting.
That was nice.
And now for our classical moment.
Oh, operator, help us.
Something needs to be off the call.
Is there anybody here who can help us?
No, my God. Gisela. Oh, that was good.
Ouch.
Good job. Whoever did that.
Ultimately, there are several kind of time periods that we can look at aiming to produce something, even if it is just a case of, okay, we've looked at X, Y, and Z. We feel that X is something that we're not going to be able to change. Y can be addressed by possibly some form of advisory or whatever, and maybe Z requires something else. I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, what are our options? I think Tim mentioned something there earlier on this evening, but ultimately just kind of talking and talking and talking about this isn't going to help anybody. So, I mean, if we could please move towards something a little bit more tangible with actual goals, it would be helpful.
Well, one of the questions I have, which is much more focused than a discussion of what the language should be in it, is do we believe there is registrants, there should be certain clarity to what the registrants can expect in any given contract? And this goes back to what Michael Pollage was talking about a good number of weeks ago. Should registrars be tied to stating what is actually going to happen as opposed to, in terms of the contract, leaving the window wide open for options? Because I'm not disagreeing. I think we do need to start writing this down. But that's one of the key issues, I believe, in, you know, the question of do registrants have a reasonable expectation of getting back a domain after expiration is if they read the agreements, will they understand what rules they're operating under? Ron?
Yes. I totally agree that the language issue is important, but I go back to the point where if we have varying contracts, even if they're modeled toward plain language, I don't think there's any kind of competition really supported by the aspect that you have to read all of these varying contracts to select a registrar based on the contract language. So I can make a point of saying if you had a uniform ICANN policy about post-expiration recovery that says, you know, this will happen when the domain name expires, you know, an email contact will be made this many times, this is the process you go through, then we have a chance of having education work, because it's those rules apply no matter what registrar you've chosen. But that doesn't mean that you could that an individual registrar couldn't compete on the basis of saying we do more, but that absolute uniformity, which could also be posted on the ICANN site, so registrants could look to a central place for education. But then they could say, oh, in addition to the email that ICANN requires, we will also make a telephone call to remind you that the domain name needs renewal. So it doesn't, having the uniformity doesn't preclude additional competition, but it isn't all stirred into the mix. There's the uniformity, and then there's a section where, in addition to what we're required to do, our registry will do more for you. So please register your domain name with us because we offer these additional services. So does that help preserve the competition aspect that you were bringing up?
Jeff?
Yeah, so this is Jeff. So I think if you're saying that, hey, these are the things that ICANN requires, and that needs to be put in there, like saying, you know, I forgot, what is it, the two emails on the renewal notices beforehand, that's fine, but I don't think forcing somebody to say, a registrar to say, you'll have X number of days or Y number of days as a minimum, that's not required by ICANN policy or contract, and that would also, it's not about the competition, but I think you heard from one of the registrars who is a very small registrar and doesn't necessarily have the funding to float to the domains for, let's say, 35 days. They might delete or do something else after 4 or 5 days. So you can't force registrars to, how to conduct their financial policy on that front. So I would say if it's about, the notifications and the other pieces, I'm fine with that. But dictating on what registrars do and their financials, I would stay away from that, and I would be very much opposed to that.
I'll just ask a question. Right now, as I noted in the chat, we have uniformity with virtually nothing being guaranteed or required by ICANN. Do the people on this call believe that we should be setting that level somewhat higher than that? And there are financial issues, but financial issues are not the only ones. Barry?
Thank you, Alan. That's very kind. A couple of things, and I guess first and foremost is, and this is a kind of a mini lessons learned from the RAP working group, is when we start using the word uniformity, it really seems to scare several stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we ought to use caution with the word uniformity and start looking at one of the things that we've come up with as minimum baseline. And that still allows the element of competition and differentiation to exist in the marketplace. And the reason why I say minimum baseline, and Mikey, I know, has brought this up several times, is the fact that in some of our research that we looked at in the RAP group and inventorying contracts and the like, a couple of those standard sections in registration agreements dealt with renewals and expiration. And I'll just briefly touch on the number, but roughly there were about half of our pool that we reviewed through that didn't seem to have any formalized section relative to renewals or expiration. And that in of itself is the inconsistency that leads to the gap where people or registrants may not understand what they're getting into. So, I think when we start talking about plain language and some of these things, that's all well and good. I think first and foremost, we need to start with some sort of minimum baseline that requires registrars to say, here is our policy on expiration, here is our policy on renewal. And starting with that is good, because having reviewed through a lot of these contracts, the language in there isn't necessarily that difficult to understand, but more importantly, if it's not there at all, then nobody can understand it. And then just to kind of carry it to the next degree, which I think is very passionate to McKaylee, is wholeheartedly registrants aren't reading these contracts. And I'm probably the grossest offender of that. And the number of domains that I've acquired over my years, I probably never read one contract up until I started getting involved in ICANN. And so that's part of the gap, and that really leads to what Mikey has suggested, is that there's some other platform by which we, for lack of a better word, dumb down contracts so that registrants can easily understand it. But I think most importantly at the time of the registration, et cetera, is that we somehow kind of force-feed educate them as to what they're getting and not getting when they get that particular domain. So, again, just to summarize, is we need to close the gap from a true contract perspective that there are some sort of minimum requirements. We need to look at some sort of platform or best practice in which we can educate the registrant on expiration and renewal and going from there.
How do you propose, if Barry, if I can keep you on the line, how do you propose we come to closure on what this minimum baseline is? To quote a statement that was made at the meeting we held in Seoul, any ability of a registrant to recover a domain name after expiration is at the, I'm paraphrasing, but the goodness of heart of the registrar, because there is currently nothing which requires that that be done. How do we go about deciding on and recommending to ICANN and the board where to set that minimum baseline?
That is a good question, and this is just personally Barry speaking. You find the best of breed, and you build upon that. And so we can all kind of speculate who may be best of breed, some of which are on this call, but at the very minimum, we do a survey of who the good players are that seem to propagate and promote what their policies are relative to expiration, and minimize it to help create that baseline, if that answered your question.
It does. Mikey.
Alan, this is Mikey. I just want to jump in sort of in answer to your question and say that while there is no recourse once the domain has expired, I think we're also in need of writing some of this stuff down. We've had a lot of conversations about the stages of expiry. And before a domain has expired, there are various and sundry sort of gray area periods where the domain is in.
Maybe we're talking, let's be clear, when I'm using the term expired, I mean the end of the 1 year or N-year period under which you registered that domain.
Yes.
I'm not talking about any of the time after that. That's post-expiration.
Right. So I think that, just to amplify what Barry said, you know, we really need to write some of these observations that we've already made down. And once they're written down, then it's easier to edit them. You know, one of the problems with these calls is that, Alan, you've asked the same questions a number of times, and each time we're in different moods and different phases of the moon and come to different conclusions. We need to start scribbling some of this.
Yeah, no, the point was well taken. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, that, you know, that's where I was headed. I mean, I think that we can distill a pretty good chronology of the phases of expiry. We can distill the major components of that. We can encourage a baseline across registrars that's not terribly stressful to the registrar community as a minimum expectation that's consistent across all registrars. And then registrars are free to go beyond that baseline and then describe the whole thing in some form of plain language, whether it's in the contract or as an addendum or roadmap in front or something, but some sort of on-the-spot education for registrars or for registrants when they're making the purchase decision to whether or not to engage this particular entity in a contract. I've been on call hunting for domain names like which registrar and what registrar and compare registrars, and all of those names are registered, but nobody's using them yet. So if anybody's got a name like that, I think one of the things that would be very helpful is if somebody just went, read all the contracts, and wrote down what they say about expiry and just put them on the web so that consumers could compare them.
Michele?
Right. I had a whole load of thoughts down. I kind of try to get them back into coherence. Well, first couple of things. The idea of minimum baseline is a hell of a lot more palatable than uniformity. And I for a multitude of reasons, if nothing else, GoDaddy and Enom are both based in the United States and fall under U.S. jurisdiction. We're based in Ireland. There's going to be differences in legislation, so the uniformity thing would scare me. Best of breed concept, I mean, I would look at somewhere like registrarstats.com. Nobody's forcing people to register domains with GoDaddy or Network Solutions or Register.com or Enom. If they were total scumbags and treated all their registrants like dirt, they wouldn't hold the market share that they hold. So obviously, whatever they're doing can't be that abhorrent. And the other thing is, in terms of moving forward with things, we have a document from the GNSO Council which gives us a charter. So there's several questions within that charter that should be addressed. And I mean, maybe it's a simple case of going through those questions one by one and going, right, do we have anything to say on this at this point? Do we think that this is worth addressing, yes or no? And just work on what is there rather than going off into wonderful tangents about making the world a better place.
Could our heavy breather mute, please?
Tim?
Sorry, get mute off. Yeah, I was just going to mention that there are a few requirements that are across the board. I mean, for example, Tim talked about at least a minimum of two notices, and I think the deletes policy, consensus policy that was done a few years ago, adds a few others to that. So one way to maybe start would be to look at those and say, okay, what are these at least few things that are required or are a minimum that all registrars, you know, must do. That way we'd have at least the existing baseline to work from. And I think because I've heard, you know, that there's the current level of uniformity is nothing. If that's true, then it's probably because there's some enforcement issue, because there is a baseline of things that need to be done or that are required to be done by all registrars. So it might be to the group's advantage to fix at least a minimum amount of time, try to put that together, so that we have that to start with. But I think that's missing right now. For me, there doesn't seem to be a lot of agreement on what that is, but I think it could be put together fairly easily.
Well, I think the point's being well taken. If we start writing it, then at least we can note the people who disagree and try to move forward on some common ground. If nothing else, I learned a lot over the last month in terms of the trademark group the GNSO put together, and the fact that it is possible for people of goodwill to come to common ground when they start off at the opposite ends of the earth.
Cheryl?
Thank you, Alan. Just going back to this slightly earlier discussion about web-based tools where potential registrants or registrants on renewal, for example, can go and have a little look at what differences or otherwise occur and where the uniformities and contracts are. On a price-only example, the one I've just put in, whatsinaname.com.au, is a very simple, very well-known tool here in Australia. Now, it only runs on price comparisons, but there's no reason why such a model couldn't run on contract comparisons or features and benefits comparisons or anything else that the industry would like to use as offerings for helping consumers navigate their way around. One of the things I use this particular tool for, and it happens to be a very neutrally based tool. It's not run by industry. It's actually run by one of our directors of AUDA as a public service, for the want of better words. And AUDA does support its activities, so ICANN could do a similar thing. One of the things I tend to do from my perspective when I'm advising someone as to where to get their domain name from is I don't want to compromise my position in AUDA or AUCD, so I say, look at this tool, use the hyperlinks, and then compare what each of these offerings are going to give you and see whether it matches your need. And it means that you're not giving biased advice, but you are encouraging people to find an easy way to find best practice players.
Thank you. Anyone else? I expected Mike Pelage to have some comments around now, but I haven't heard him. Is he really on the call? No, he's muted. All right, we've spent an hour talking about this. I think, in fact, we have drifted into the other areas I was going to move to, and that is, should we be in a position to actually specify policy? In other words, is the status quo sufficient, or do we need to? And I'm hearing more and more a consensus, or at least a movement towards one, that we should be looking at baselines which may well be above where we are today. But I think the tone is we shouldn't be trying to do absolutely the best possible offering today, but at least set reasonable expectations. Marika has just put up the expired domain deletion policy. Would you like to speak a little bit?
No, this is Marika. It's just to Tim's point where we're saying looking at the current provisions and maybe go from there, so I thought it might be helpful just to put that up and people can scroll through it. I mean, these provisions have now been integrated into the new REA, but it might be a starting point for those that want to look at what the current baseline is, so that's why I put it up.
I think the problem with most of the terms in there, and there are a few that are relevant, and particularly the 45-day period by which a name has to be deleted or renewed, is, and I may have said this on this call before, I'm not sure, the day that announcement was made about EDDP, another ICANN made another announcement on the same day saying that two large registrars had changed the terms of their contract so domains could be reassigned to other people during that period, and effectively made the protections in EDDP moot. So although there are some very things carefully specified in EDDP, we are having this PDP again. Therefore, it apparently wasn't fully satisfactory. No one else has anything to say? Okay. The other items were, where do we go from here in terms of actually setting policy? And as I just said, I think we're starting to come to an agreement that maybe we do need to set some minimum baseline. Siva has his hand up. Why don't you go first, and I'll continue.
Yeah, I was looking forward to Mr. Liang's presentation. If it's cancelled today, will we have a schedule for another day?
We decided earlier in this meeting that we won't have another meeting until January 5th, I think. And I'm hoping that Michael will have something to talk about by then. I'm not sure I'm going to pin him down on this call right now, but hopefully. Anything else? Siva? No. Mikey?
Just because I'm in Chinese water torture mode today.
Good.
When Michael presents his proposal, could he have something written down instead of just talking it off on the call so that we can see something that can stick to the wall?
I think that's a reasonable expectation. I will admit I was guilty of trying to put some little bit of pressure on Michael to try to do it sooner rather than later, and there was just not enough time to do it properly. But we will do our best to make sure there is something you could have seen ahead of time and something written.
I think the key here is that a lot of these early written documents don't have to be perfect. They could be an outline that just describes the major points in bullet form with the expectation that beautiful flowing paragraphs are going to get written later. But, you know, it's so hard to constantly sort of cycle through the same discussion without any kind of framework to sort of hold the consensus thoughts together. That I'm just sort of at my...
Noted, I think. Whoever's typing on a noisy keyboard without muting would appreciate it if you could either stop typing or mute. Whoever it is has stopped. Mikey, are you continuing or your hand just...
No, that's it. That's all.
Is Michael Young on the call still? Try to page down and see. He is not. Or is he mute? No, he's not on the call. I will pass on that request to him then. Any other thoughts on where we go from here? The message is clear that we need to start writing something. We need to start coming to conclusions, at least in note form, if not something better. And we seem to be moving towards a decision that we are in a position to start recommending minimum baselines and have them passed as official policy by ICANN. Siva again?
Yeah, we can begin by setting up a collaborative workspace, maybe something like Google Documents, which every one of us should be able to edit. And so that should begin the process.
Noted as a suggestion. Ron.
Yes, I just have a question. Do we have a firm end date in our remit from ICANN, or do we just proceed until we're finished?
Typically the latter, although if there is a determination that we're not moving anywhere, other action can be taken. Marika?
This is Marika. I just wanted to know that, you know, of course there are very prescribed timelines for everything, but, you know, not realistic, but one of the first outputs that this group is expected to come out with is an initial report that's prescribed by the bylaws as one of the steps in a policy development process. So in that initial report, normally the group describes the process, you know, discussions it has had, We summarize the public comments and the constituency statements, and there's also an opportunity for the group to maybe put forward some ideas or suggestions that they would like to test with the ICANN community and receive feedback on before actually deciding on final recommendations. So that's something to take into account if, you know, if the group cannot come to agreement now, it's an opportunity as well to put down some ideas and get some further feedback as well on how certain things might be implementable or how they might work or how they are perceived by others in the community. So.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else with any comments at the moment? If not, I think we have our marching orders. And what I would like is a couple of the people who have been proposing where we go from now to try to put some thoughts together in writing also. Just emails to the list would be a good start. And that gives us a place to start putting our stake in the ground and more important perhaps, gives other people a chance to rebut or disagree in a way that has a little bit more permanence than just these calls. Marika.
And just, Rick, I'm happy to prepare some kind of first draft outlining the different elements. We already had the public comments and constituency statement and start integrating that into kind of a template that we then can fill up with all the other items. And I'm happy as well to put in there some of the notes I've been taking on the different meetings, going through the different issues that might help serve as well as a basis for further work.
Okay, thank you. Mikey?
This is Mikey. That's exactly what I was saying. Marika, do you think that you could have that draft done by the meeting on the 5th of January?
Probably not.
Yeah, well, I was just trying.
Hoping to have some holidays as well between Christmas and the years, and as you know, there's some other reports that we're currently drafting as well. But I can definitely do my best and try to have something out there. But I think the 5th is a bit too ambitious.
I guess my thought here, this is Mikey again, is that rather than trying to come up with the final draft, if you could simply put the highlights of your notes in an outline. It would be very helpful just to sort of reconstruct these arguments. Again, I don't think we need to come up with a final draft before we start working on whether or not we have consensus. But rather than having four or five people firing off disjointed notes to the list, I really think that we need somebody, either Marika or somebody else in the working group, to pull together that outline with at least an initial draft, and then maybe use the working group wiki. I'm not sure if we've got. I presume we have a wiki for this.
Well, if not, we can real quick.
Yes, we do.
But I think we do.
Yeah. So
we have a wiki.
That is the shared workspace. It's just time to start getting some of this down on paper.
I'm happy to have a first go. I said I just don't know if I will be able to have something ready by the 5th as well, seeing that I still hope to finalize as well by that date the registrar survey. So it's another deliverable then.
Yeah, I think it. Well, you can disagree with me. I think it's more important to get a summary of where we're starting to converge or where we diverge, even in note form, as opposed to the draft of the report itself. I hear resounding agreement.
Yeah. Cheryl here. Sorry.
Yes.
I should have had I was in another screen doing things. I should have put my hand up. I thought that the wiki had some matrix tools, some opportunities to put up in sort of little boxes, small bite-sized pieces for us to weigh in terms of comments in other lines after that. Perhaps that might be a way forward as well. I'm no wiki expert. I just think I've seen it on other ones.
This is Marika. The only challenge with Wiki, if you really, I think to make notes and put comments there, it works well, but the Wiki doesn't really work very well if you really start editing text and, try to have track changes, or you can see what people have changed or added. So for putting notes together, I think the Wiki, will be a helpful tool, and I'm happy as well for, stuff I put together to first put that there so people can add stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably would be easier, to use track changes or words. You really want to provide edits in that way.
Well, what collaboration space do you propose we do use? Because lists I find are equally limited. When I get 300 or 400 emails a day, my likelihood of picking up the one that takes me to the list to make a contribution, an email list, it tends to be put in my I'll get around to it pile, not in my do it immediately pile, and then it gets, 6 pages further on. How do we use the Google Docs as Siva suggested? Perfectly happy to do that. I just like to know what tool we are going to use.
I've never used Google Documents, but I'm happy to look into that. I mean, as we've done with other working groups, it's either indeed having some wiki pages to allow for some initial discussion and then normally move all of that into a Word document that people then have an opportunity to either, review together in Adobe Connect, like we do here, or redline it, and I normally then incorporate all those changes into one document so people can see what has been suggested or has been changed.
Cheryl, again, look, I'm an ISOC member, but I'm perfectly happy to use, proprietary software. There's all sorts of things that we can use, including comments and edits in an ordinary Adobe PDF world. Don't care what, just want something.
I think at this point the Wiki is the most generally accessible, and it's moderately easy to make comments. But I agree with Cheryl. I don't think for this larger group or even for this wider group in terms of what they normally use, do we want to go into anything with collaborative editing or trying to, as a community, build the final report. But I think we do need a place to collect input, and a Wiki, I think, is probably as good as any in terms of something that's going to be usable quickly by most of us. If your note about 500 emails a day is well taken. On the other hand, if you tell me I have to learn a new tool to be able to participate, we're cutting down participation very significantly, I'm afraid.
That's why doing things in Word and Adobe type documentary formats where everyone has a different color and their initial attached to it, and we can, agree or disagree on them within an Adobe Connect Room environment sometime mid-January is another way forward. Just depends on how many open source purists we have.
See a lot of check marks on the list.
Yeah, this is Marika, because I have to admit, I mean, we do work quite a bit with wikis, and there are only a few people that actually, I think, either are comfortable or, have the time or like actually going into the wiki and do it that way. I think so far we've more people that actually just go through a document and make their comments in an email or redline it, but there are a few dedicated people that actually use the wiki, I think.
Okay.
But that might change.
Sure. Cheryl here. Look, the wiki is an excellent form of archive and public space, that other people can observe, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's very important. It's part of our toolbox. I'm just keen to get us to use any particular tool that's going to work, and anything that I can put into my Dropbox and pick up, regardless of what I'm using to connect to the internet over the silly season, even if it's just my PDA, is going to be more likely to get my attention than something that's, going to require me to be tethered and connected to a particular list or whatever. But let's just aim for getting something out in the middle-ish of January that we can be, quite literally going for consensus on.
Okay. I certainly accept that as a challenge and a target. Any other thoughts at this point? In the absence of any, I'll give you back your next 12 minutes of your life. We will meet again 3 weeks from today. Is that correct? 1, 2, 3. And I wish you all a good holiday season, a good new year, a restful time. And we'll come back ready to work and ready to close this thing up before Nairobi, right?
Yep.
I expected more giggles than that.
Sorry, I'm fighting for the low-flying pigs.
Well, can we at least try and get the initial report out before Nairobi, so it could be, discussed at Nairobi?
Cheryl, the challenge is there that report would need to be out by the 15th of February because of
was talking about mid-January for consensus.
We're not likely to have a report by then, I think, but we certainly should have something substantive to talk about.
All right, then. I'll may have to settle for a first draft, but we can aim high, can't we?
I'm speaking on my own behalf only. I've taken on too many overzealous challenges recently. I think I want a reasonable one here. A happy holiday to all of you, a good rest, and we'll see you in 3 weeks.
And thanks, Alan.
And humbug to you too, McKaylee.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, all.
Bye.